crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm Brent Nuchtigal and we're coming to you today, as per usual, from Jerusalem, Israel. Who are the modern descendants of the ancient Israelites? History confirms that this ancient people existed and lived in the area known today as Israel. But does that mean that Israelis today make up the sum total of the modern descendants of the ancient Israelites? Are the Jews in the Middle East today the Israelites? On the second half of today's show, we're going to look into the Bible and discover the answer to that question. But before we get to that, on the first part of today's show, I want to discuss a recent chance discovery that was made in Iraq in the city of Mosul. And this was first reported by The Telegraph on February 28th. And the article I'll be quoting is the one that featured in the Times of Israel, and I'll be including this article in the as a link beneath the show. The article is entitled, "Islamic State Looting Uncovers Ancient Palace Beneath Jonah's Tomb." Quite an unexpected discovery here. It writes, "Archaeologists in Iraq say they have made an unexpected discovery under a site destroyed by Islamic State, traditionally thought to hold the tomb of the biblical prophet Jonah. Under a mound covering the ancient city of Nineveh, beneath a shrine destroyed by ISIS, they found a previously undiscovered palace built in the 7th century BCE for the biblical Assyrian king Sennacherib and renovated by his son Esarhaddon." So this is quite spectacular. Back in 2014, Islamic State, as they took over Mosul, they rigged the shrine of Jonah here, and this is probably not... while Jonah did go to this city, it was constructed after Jonah's time, a few hundred years after Jonah's time. So it's likely not necessarily really related to Jonah. Nevertheless, it is ancient. It is a very ancient shrine. And they did blow it up, and that sparked international outrage. It was very much destroyed, far more destroyed and damaged than even the cultural minister of Iraq said. This is when ISIS was routed from Nineveh, or from this part of Mosul. Mosul is built over the top of ancient Nineveh, or around ancient Nineveh. In mid-January, Iraqi troops liberated the western portion of Mosul, and therefore they liberated this area of ancient Nineveh. So they were expecting these archaeologists to find a destroyed site, and that was going to be very upsetting. And it is upsetting to see that. But what had happened was, in some of that destruction and then later tunnels that the Islamic State dug beneath the shrine, they actually uncovered an earlier palace. An earlier palace. Now, they were searching for different artifacts to plunder and then sell on the black market, which is a place where Islamic State gets a lot of its funding, or a source of revenue for the Islamic State. But what they've uncovered in the process is this massive palace. This is what Iraqi archaeologist Leila Salih told Britain's Daily Telegraph. She said that in the tunnels, she discovered a marble cuneiform inscription of King Esarhaddon, thought to date back to the Assyrian Empire in 672 BC. And she found a cuneiform inscription, a new one, brand new one, that... as to this point, doesn't look like it's been translated, or at least what's on it hasn't been released to the public. And she was saying later on in here that it's likely that they're going to find a whole lot more of these as well inside this palace. And King Esarhaddon, he's a character in history that's mentioned in the Bible, and we're going to discuss him a little bit later on in today's program. This article from the Times of Israel, it continues, it says... chapters 18 and 19 of the biblical book of 2 Kings describe Sennacherib's unsuccessful attempt to conquer Jerusalem. Sennacherib is who they believe this palace was built by. Upon his return to his palace, he was murdered by his two sons, who then fled, leaving Esarhaddon to take over the kingdom. And this is what verse 37 reads of 2 Kings chapter 19. And it came to pass, as he was worshipping in the house of Nisroch his god, that Adramelech and Sarezer his son smote him with the sword, and they escaped into the land of Ararat, and Esarhaddon his son reigned in his stead. And now there is another palace that's coming up from that time. And we've obviously got other palaces from that period as well, but this is just going to be another one. And to add to the wealth of knowledge that we have from the Assyrian period. And why is it important? Because just from a biblical standpoint, King Sennacherib, who constructed this palace apparently, is mentioned the most in the Bible of all the Assyrian kings. I think there's about four or five that are mentioned inside the Bible, and yet the most chapters are dedicated to what Sennacherib was doing under the reign of King Hezekiah. And we all are familiar with the Hezekiah bulla that was just discovered and released to the public back in 2015. And will we have more artifacts that relate to the biblical narrative from that time? This is what the Telegraph report said, quoting again, this is Eleanor Robson, the head of the British Institute for the Study of Iraq. She said this: the objects don't match descriptions of what we thought was down there. We didn't know that this was down there. Then she continues, there's a huge amount of history down there, not just ornamental stones. It's an opportunity to finally map the treasure house of the world's first great empire from the period of its greatest success. And that period of its greatest success, again, is the context in which it's mentioned in the Bible. So this is going to be just a dramatic, ongoing study. And hopefully we hear lots about what they find there inside this palace. Now that there are tunnels, I mean, if the Islamic State didn't dig these tunnels underneath the Shrine of Jonah, then it's likely this was never going to be discovered. And while it is horrendous what the Islamic State has done to archaeological sites throughout the Middle East, in Mosul alone, in northern Iraq, 66 sites have been destroyed by them, and 80% of the site that of Nimrod, one of the most ancient Assyrian cities, that is destroyed, 80% of it, by jihadists driving bulldozers through it and detonating explosives. But if there is going to be a silver lining to all of that, it is that some of their tunnels have uncovered a previously undiscovered palace of the Assyrian Empire. A palace that is built or was constructed by kings mentioned heavily in the Bible. Now, when we come back, we're going to look at an event surrounding one of those kings and how that relates to the travel of the Israelites. We'll be right back.
This is Trumpet Radio, 101.3. KPCG and KPCG.fm. The podcast of each show is available at thetrumpet.com, at KPCG.fm, and at iTunes.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall, coming to you from Jerusalem, Israel. Who are the modern descendants of the Israelites? The Bible, as well as secular history, they indicate that the Israelites were a physical nation made up of numerous tribes, and that nation was named after its forefather Jacob, who had his name changed to Israel. Then if we look into the Bible today, passages that concern prophecy about the time we're living in right now, they concern the nation or nations of Israel. We also see prophecies for the specific tribe of Judah. Are these prophecies meant to affect the scattered tribes dispersed among all the nations, or are they prophecies for specific nations? Now, if you believe in prophecy, then you'll have to believe that there are nations or a nation that make up the modern descendants of Israel. Now, we have the nation Israel today in the Middle East. Is this the nation what the Bible is referring to? Is this the nation that the Bible refers to when it's talking about Israel in prophecy? Now, we find in the prophecies in the Bible many of such that are for Israel, but also for a specific nation of Judah. So if Judah is the Jews and the Jews are in Israel today, where are the Israelites? Now, simply going back to the kingship following Solomon's death, King Solomon back 3,000 years ago, shows us that there was a division of the kingdom of Israel at that time. And that division was never to be restored, never to be healed, even to this day. You'll remember from that history that Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, he was ruling over both Israel and Judah, or the collective tribes of Israel, you could say. And following his death, a representative of the northern 10 tribes, he went to him, his name was Jeroboam, and he said, "Are you going to back off from the hard tactics of your father Solomon? If you don't, we're out of here. We're going to split from you." Rehoboam says, "No way, I'm going to make it even harder on you, you other tribes from the north." Then Jeroboam says, "To your tents, O Israel. To your tents, O Israel." Israel then decides to leave the rulership of the house of David, never to return. And from this point on, Israel and Judah are separate. Separate kingdoms, separate foreign policies, separate internal affairs, separate religions even. Now, the average conception today seems to be that the tribe of Judah, which remained, carried the title Israel. Most people think that the 10 tribes, they broke off. They were driven out from the nation Israel, but it was the nation Israel which now set up its kingdom in the north under the Ephraimite Jeroboam in the land of Samaria, north of Jerusalem. It's not Israel, but Judah, a mere 3 tribes broken off from Israel, which is left behind in Jerusalem. The 10 tribes were not broken off from Israel. Israel did not remain in Jerusalem. Instead, Judah was broken off from Israel. Okay, so let's just have a little proof, some scriptural proof, that the 10 tribed people called Israel, often prophetically spoken of as Ephraim, they're not the Jews. They were never the Jews. Those northern tribes of Israel were never known as Jews. Remember that the term Jew is merely a nickname for Judah, and hence it applies to one nation. One nation, the house of Judah only, and that was never to be the house of Israel. Now, you can go for a look at any concordance in the Bible or for the Bible, and you'll see the first time that the word Jew occurs. When does that occur? It's found in 2 Kings chapter 16 and verse 6. Nowhere in all the Bible before this does the word Jew appear. No, notice it. We're just going to go through these a few verses here in 2 Kings chapter 16 and verse 6. Now, in verse... well. up to verse 6. But in verse 1, Ahaz, he's the king of Judah and he's beginning to reign. It says in verse 2 that he sits on David's throne. Then at this time, a man named Pekah was king over Israel. And King Pekah of Israel formed an alliance with Rezin, king of Syria, against Judah. And together the armies of Israel and Syria, both allied, came up against Jerusalem and they besieged King Ahaz of Judah, but they could not overcome him. And verse 5 says that. Then notice verse 6. At that time, Rezin, king of Syria, again, he's the ally of Israel fighting against Israel, or fighting with Israel against Judah, recovered Eilat to Syria and drove the Jews from Eilat. This, again, is the first place in the Bible where the Jew is used, and we find Israel at war with the Jews. So the northern tribes of Israel were never referred to as Jews. And again, going back to the time of Jeroboam, they had a different religion than the Jews. Sure, they worshipped the same God. The same God had a name, that in name only, but the way they worshipped him was different. So who drove the Jews out of Eilat? The ally of King Pekah of Israel, the army fighting with Israel against Judah. Now, why are we going into this? Why are we going into these details? Because many people believe that the Jews today are Israel. They are not the nation of Israel. They are Judah. Judah containing the three tribes of Levi, Benjamin, and Judah. And wherever Israel today is, remember that Israel as a national name does not mean Jew. Whoever the lost 10 tribes are today, they are not Jews. Wherever you see the name Israel, a house of Israel, Samaria, or Ephraim used in prophecy, remember this, it never refers to the Jews, but to Israel, which was at war with the Jews. Now, 2 Kings chapter 17 is a very important chapter in the Bible, which details the destruction and deportation of Israel. And yet, 2 Kings continues. It continues after chapter 17 to recount another 100 years of history belonging to a people. And those people, they are the Jews. They are no longer Israel. Well, what happened to the Israelites? What happened to Israel? True, you can say that the tribes of Judah below, or the tribe of Judah, Benjamin, Levi, were Israelites because they were both all sons of Jacob. But they weren't called Israel. They weren't called Israel. The northern tribes were Israel. And then Judah split off from them, came out of them, and then were called Judah or the Jews. Now, what happened to Israel? Well, they were transported out of that nation or out of that territory by the Assyrian Empire by Sennacherib's forefathers. Sennacherib, he's the one where the palace was just discovered. Sennacherib's palace that was renovated by his son, or the ruler that came after him, Esarhaddon, in Mosul. Well, his forefathers, they took the Israelites, the northern tribes, into captivity. Now, Sennacherib, when he came on the scene, he wanted to do the same thing with Judah, and he was almost successful. And had Sennacherib been successful with the Jews in taking them into captivity, they would have been gone into captivity with Israel, but they didn't. They didn't. They lived for an extra 100 years in the area known today as Israel. And eventually they were taken into a totally separate, different captivity by a different people, the Babylonians. But some would ask, I thought Israel came back to the land of Canaan after 70 years. Yes, part of Israel did come back to the land after 70 years. But which part? It wasn't those tribes that had the name of Israel. Jeremiah's prophecy of where he talks about these 70 years, that only includes those tribes that he warned. When he was giving his message of warning, Jeremiah the prophet, the northern tribes, they're nowhere to be seen. There were already other people settled in the territory that formerly belonged to the northern tribes of Israel. The southern kingdom of Judah then, they were the only ones that received Jeremiah's warning. They are the only ones to receive the prophecy of 70 years, saying that after 70 years, you will return to this land. And the only ones that could have returned are the ones that went into the Babylonian captivity. Notice proof for this in Ezra chapter 1 and verse 5. We're going to get some context here by reading the first few verses. This is set in Babylon, these scriptures. This is at the very conclusion of those 70 years. And notice who Ezra is talking about, which tribes get to come back to Jerusalem, to Judah, to rebuild. Now, this is very important, and we're going to get to somewhere here about who the Jewish nation is today and whether they make up all of Israel or not. This is what it says here in Ezra chapter 1 and verse 1. This is around year 538 BC. Now, in the first year of the reign of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Eternal by the mouth of Jeremiah might be accomplished, the Eternal stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, and he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it in writing, saying, "Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth have the Eternal, the God of heaven, given me, and he has charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah." Not in Israel, it's in Judah. "Whosoever there is among you of all his people, his God be with him. Let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Eternal, the God, for the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. And whoever is left in any place where he sojourns, let the men of his place help him with silver and with gold and with goods and with beasts, beside the freewill offering of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem." So he releases this edict saying, anyone that would like to go back to Jerusalem can go back to Jerusalem to rebuild. And notice who stands up. Verse 5. "Then rose up the heads of the fathers' houses of Judah, Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites, even all whose spirit God had stirred to go up to build the house of the Eternal, which is in Jerusalem." Why not? "Then rose up all the heads of the fathers of Ephraim, Manasseh, Zebulun, and other tribes," etc. Because they weren't in Babylon. These people weren't taken into the Babylonian captivity. They were taken by the previous empire, the Assyrian Empire. And they were likely at this point, already 100 years previous, gone further north, already started to migrate after the fall of the Assyrian people. Notice there in Ezra chapter 1 and verse 5 that there were only a few tribes that went back, and all of them belonged to the southern kingdom of Judah. These are the Jews. The Jews returned. Israel didn't return at that time. Let's go now to Ezra chapter 4 and verse 1 and see another place here where it mentions and gives us insight and tells us that not all of Israel returned. Ezra chapter 4 and verse 1 to 4 says this, "Now when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the children of the captivity were building a temple unto the Eternal, the God of Israel, then they drew near to Zerubbabel and to the heads of fathers' houses, and said unto them, Let us build with you, for we seek your God as you do, and we do sacrifice unto him since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, who brought us up here." So notice this again. Here's a people that's coming to Zerubbabel from the north of them, and they're saying, Let us build with you. We were brought here by Esarhaddon, king of Assyria. Is Esarhaddon a king of Assyria? Yeah, of course he is. We've just found the palace that he renovated, or at least the Islamic State uncovered it, and archaeologists now are starting to deal with that new discovery. And that was his palace. And it's saying here that during his reign, there were some people that were brought into this territory just north of where the Jews were, just north of where Jerusalem was. The very same territory that the Israelites had occupied before. The northern tribes of Israel had occupied before. These people weren't Israelites. When the Israelites were deported, another foreign people came in. And these people were taught a different religion to the Jews. They might have worshipped, again, the same God in name, but they were not Israelites. But notice who they're talking to, though. Verse 1 again says, "Now when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the children of the captivity were building a temple," they knew who these people were. Ezra recording this, he knows exactly who the tribes that came back to build the temple were. They were the Jews. They were Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. Now, under the leadership of Zerubbabel and then Nehemiah, these adversaries, the Samaritans, they would never be able to root out the Jews, though they tried. They tried and to destroy the fledgling Jewish province in the 5th century BC. They were never able to root them out and rid them. Then for the next 400 years, since the time that Alexander the Great came through, then his empire gets split up. The Ptolemaic Empire comes to rule over Judea. The Jews are still there. The Ptolemaic Empire then subsides, and the Seleucid Empire rules over Judea for another 50 or 60 years. The Jews are still there. And then finally, under the reign of, or during the time that the Seleucids were in power over Jerusalem, Judah gets its freedom through the Maccabean revolt. And there is a Jewish state starting in 142 BC, all the way until the Romans came through in 63 BC. There's a Jewish state. The Jews are still there. Not the tribes of Israel, just the Jewish tribes of the Jewish southern kingdom, same people that Jeremiah warned. Then these Jews stayed there all the way through the Roman period until up to 70 AD, when Jerusalem was besieged and taken by the Romans, and then the Jews were scattered throughout all nations by the Romans, and they faced persecution wherever they went. And while there were some scattered Jews remaining in this area known as Israel today, most of them were removed. And they were removed for about 1,900 years. But there were Jews all through Europe, North Africa, Spain, Eastern Europe, holding on to their lineage through their observance to the Jewish religion. The Israelites at this time, though, they had long lost any religious semblance to the Jews. They had already changed the day of worship while they were still in the land of Israel. The northern tribes of Israel, they had been lost to history ever since they were taken into Assyrian captivity. But the Jews, those that kept the Sabbath, they were known to history all through this period. They could be traced by their religious observance. And eventually, when we get into the 19th century, the Jews, they came back. They came back to the land of Israel. And these, many of them, they knew they were Jewish. How do they know they were Jewish? Because in their history, they kept the Sabbath. They held on to a lot of the traditions that their forefathers taught. The nation of Israel, or the tribes of northern tribes of Israel, again, they were lost to history. They had no national identity. Now, when the Jews came back to the land of Israel in the early 1900s, instead of calling the nation Judah, which would have been more accurate, they took upon themselves, this is the nation this broadcast is coming to you from, the name Israel, perpetuating the myth that Israel had returned. No, Israel has not returned to the land of Canaan. Israel has not come back. Only the Jews have returned to the land of Canaan. So that begs the question, the same question I asked at the beginning of this show, where are the Israelites? Where are the rest of the tribes? The majority of the tribes, in fact, according to Bible prophecy, they need to exist, and they need to exist in a national form for those prophecies to come to pass. So you know they're out there, and you can understand who they are. And really, by understanding who they are, since the majority of Bible prophecy concerns them and not the Jews, that is the key that will unlock Bible prophecy for you, knowing the identity of those Israelites. Where are they and who are they? Now, you can understand, and to do so, I want you to read the book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Now, the title gives some of it away, but if you want a solid proof of where those tribes are, if you want your Bible to come alive like never before, then you need to read this book. It's free, and you can request it, or the hard copy, or you can download it. I'll leave a link for you, as per usual, below this show. This is the end of another program of Watch Jerusalem. Thanks very much for taking time out of your day to listen. If you would like to send some feedback, you can do that by sending your letters or your emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Make sure you keep up with our Twitter feed and also our Facebook page, where all of our articles get posted so that you won't miss a thing. Thanks again for listening. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.